So when Sister Ruth Prejean wrote her book Dead Man Walking, she described the process of being with death row inmates right up to the moment of death that was a part of her own personal deep ambivalence about the death penalty itself. But imagine if you went on the same journey but had no such ambiguity, no such lack of clarity about the utility of the death penalty in providing justice. What would it be like then?
You expect to be executed?
Eventually. I'm starting to have my doubts, but yeah, I do.
Will you make a final statement?
Yeah.
Do you know what you're going to say?
Yeah. It's not eloquent. I do irreverence better than eloquent.
I feel like we haven't finished. I'm intending to come early tomorrow. Does your schedule, routine, whatever it is, permit our continuing this for a few minutes in the morning?
I didn't have to check my books. I'm open.
There you can hear an irreverence. There you can hear a kind of humor. But it was a fascinating collaboration between Robert Blecker, who's my next guest, professor of law at New York Law School, and the subject and producer of a new documentary film, Robert Blecker Wants Me Dead. That's him talking to convicted killer Daryl Holton, who eventually was executed. Robert Blecker, thank you for joining the program.
My pleasure, John.
And, you know, you make a powerful argument at the beginning of this film that you absolutely believe in the death penalty, that there are people who should be executed based on their crimes, and that you sought out, by going to death row, those precise people who you think are appropriate for the death penalty, and to, in some sense, explore your feelings about witnessing their execution. It sounds like a fascinating journey, but one that's not filled with a lot of forgiveness and redemption, perhaps.
Well, I'm just as concerned that those who don't deserve it don't get it as I am that those who do. So it's not just that I sought out those who clearly deserve it. I also sought out those who didn't deserve it in order to better inform my understanding and the public understanding of what we do and why we do it.
Tell us about your relationship with Daryl Horton. How did you appear to grow on each other?
Well, it was a very strange relationship. I repeatedly told him that he deserved to die, and he repeatedly told me that I needed a psychiatrist to find out why it was so important to me. When I first met him, I had been informed that he was different from all the others, not only in the fact that he was one of the rare mass murderers. He had murdered his four children, and he had done it methodically, carefully planned, carefully carried out, but that he was just a different breed. He had foregone any rise in levels. That is to say, he kept himself on the most restrictive level on death row, refusing to have recreation with other people in the group, going out in chains and shackles every time he was out of his cell. So he refusing any appeals. So it seemed at one level as if he wanted to punish himself.
But on another level, his lack of a kind of traditional remorse comes up again and again in your film. Listen to this, and then I want to talk about this moment.
Looking back on it 10 years later, you still think that that was the appropriate expression of love for your children?
Do I wish things could have been different? Yes. Do I wish there had been other options? Yes.
Do you think about them all the time?
I don't have any problem sleeping. I don't.
So there you are asking the most unblinking question about why he killed his children and whether he believes that's an appropriate expression of love, and there's the answer. I can hear your frustration in all through this film. What did you want him to say?
I wanted him to say that he made the worst mistake imaginable. I wanted him to say that he was in pain. I wanted him to say that he regretted it, and if he had it to do again, he never would have done it.
Do you think he actually believes that and was holding that back just to deny you that?
That's an interesting question, and it's difficult to know. I mean, I waited for the letter that he must have written from Death Watch after he was executed, the letter that would come to me and say, in the 2 years, I never admitted to you that I felt remorse, but in fact, I did. And his final words, right before they killed him, they asked him if he had a final statement, and he said, I do. And that was it. The words were, I do. And it was a fair amount of speculation about what that meant. Some thought it was a reaffirmation of his wedding vows to his ex-wife, whose children he, after all, had killed. Others thought it might be, I do understand my rights and I'm waiving them by going to his death. I wanted to believe, of course it took a certain hubris, but I wanted to believe that the I do meant, I do regret it. After all, I do.
Is this story of your film, the idea that far from clarity that the death penalty is supposed to give us, it actually doesn't grant that clarity, even for you who were there with the Daryl Horton till the last moment?
If I can just clarify one thing first, it's not my film. I didn't produce it. I'm just the subject of it. I didn't control it. I didn't have final cut. So it's an honest look by the filmmaker is an abolitionist. So he and I did not agree on the death penalty. But what it reveals is not only the lack of clarity. I'm in favor of the death penalty, and they say that hard cases make bad law, and hard cases make bad polemics. This was a hard case. They may make good films. I hope that this is received as such. So far it has been. But this is not a polemic. This is not a tirade in favor of the death penalty. Daryl was a more difficult case. In the film, you see somebody named David Keene who raped and strangled a six-year-old child. That's an easy case. He clearly deserves to die. There's very little redeeming about him. In Daryl's case, there was a remarkable sense of humor, a wit, an irony, and a real thoughtfulness. He, as perverse as this sounds, he loved the law. He revered it. He saturated himself in it. And so what it shows, I think, is that even if we should kill them, and in some instances we should also appreciate their humanity. It's too easy just to dismiss them as one-dimensional monsters, that there's nothing to them but their monstrous acts. And there's a lot more to them. So, yes, the film is ambivalent in the sense of a contrast between somebody who deserves to die for what he did and yet somebody who is still a human being, rich and vital and vibrant.
You're an explorer of the law. At any point, did you want to be the executioner?
Yes, but I also wanted to be the savior. I mean, I can't plant my feet emotionally with Daryl. I mean, at the last 4 hours that we met right before he was executed, which was not filmed because they wouldn't allow any tape recorders right. or video cameras in, I told Daryl, I can't push the button. I can't do it. And he said, that's a good thing that you can't do it. That's right that you can't do it. We've gotten too close. It was very strange. He considered me his closest friend, and there was this embarrassing moment when he told me that. And I'd be damned if I'd say, you know, you're my dear friend. I mean, he's a mass murderer.
Yeah.
And yet, I did get very close to him.
Well, Robert Blecker, it's a riveting film that you are the subject of. Robert Blecker Wants Me Dead. He's a professor of law at New York Law School and the subject of this documentary film. He joined us from snowy Long Island. Thank you, Robert.
Thank you, John.
Since WNYC's first broadcast in 1924, we've been dedicated to creating the kind of content we know the world needs. Since then, New York Public Radio's rigorous journalism has gone on to win a Peabody Award and a DuPont Columbia Award, among others. In addition to this award-winning reporting, your sponsorship also supports inspiring storytelling and extraordinary music that is free and accessible to all. To get in touch and find out more, visit sponsorship.wnyc.org.